This is I Hear Things for Friday, June 18th, how to field your own listener survey. You know, we constantly hear podcast consultants and coaches and, well, people like me entreat us to survey our listeners. But it can be hard to get started with a listener survey if you've never done it before. And I've been doing it for 25 years, so I have a bit of unconscious competence with it. But it can be hard to get started, I think. And you may not be in a position to hire a company like mine, Edison, to do a listener survey for your audience. But that doesn't mean you can't ask your listeners to share with you what makes your podcast special and how it could be even better. So my intent with this podcast and the next one, which will come out in a week or two, my intent here is to give you a pretty good start, which, by the way, is also the name of my two-star daycare franchise. So since most of these thoughts are driven by the questions I most often get from podcasters, I'm going to kind of structure this like an FAQ or FAQ. So here we go. Question number one, why do I need a listener survey? Well, first of all, maybe you don't. But I will say this. Listener surveys are a crucial part of attracting sponsors, if that's your thing. If your goal is to monetize your podcast, then you have to get your head around the fact that the product you are selling is your audience, and your sponsors have a right to know what they're buying. So nothing more needs to be said about that, I hope. Most of us, however, aren't trying to monetize our shows. But I hope we can agree that we'd like to make our shows better, right? Here's the thing that I believe. Podcasting is one of the hardest crafts to level up. You can go from awful to competent at a pretty reliable pace. That can happen fairly quickly. But how do you go from competent to great? There are a lot of hard truths wrapped up in that one, my friends. But one component is absolutely audience feedback. You may harbor a romantic vision that your art transcends understanding, but even the great artists, they produce some crap first, and they had someone tell them that it was crap, right? They can't all be winners. Your listeners, and not your family and friends, but your listeners, are the most reliable way to find out if your baby is ugly. And that is the first step towards building a great show. Accepting feedback from your audience, it can be hard. It's sometimes counterintuitive, but it's the only path to master the craft. And this podcast is for those of you that want to master the craft. Next question that I sometimes get is, when shouldn't I field a listener survey? And I do have a take on this. If you have a very small audience, and let's say a few hundred or less, I don't know that I'd work on a formal survey per se. Those early few listeners at the beginning of your show and at the beginning of your journey, they are incredibly valuable to you, and you should find ways to talk to them. You can talk to them by email. You can talk to them on social media. But conversations are the better tools for that job until you start to get both core listeners and casual listeners. Successful media properties have three layers of audience. There's the primary listeners, and these are the folks who never miss an episode. They can quote every inside joke. They're really your super fans, and that's likely what you have in the early, early days. But you also have secondary listeners, and they might look at the topic before they listen that week. And then you have tertiary listeners, and maybe they listen once a month or so when they run out of their other shows or they happen to be stuck in traffic, right? All of these layers are part of a healthy audience strategy. In the early days of your podcast, again, your audience is probably weighted more towards primary listeners. You may even know most of them. But when you start to get casual listeners, that's when you know it's time to think about a survey. Because then you have the makings of a question. Your first line of inquiry as a podcaster: how can I convert occasional listeners to regular listeners? So if you focus too soon on the handful of early listeners that you get kind of at the beginning again of your journey, that might help you craft mom's favorite podcast, but you run the risk of falling into the optimization trap here. And I talked about that in last week's podcast. If you focus too soon on that early core and you ignore the potentially greener pastures of where you could go in the future. So if you can, seek out the opinion of someone you trust who has some success in podcasting and who'd be willing to listen to your show and give some honest feedback, and have conversations with those early listeners, not statistics. It's a little soon for that. What kinds of questions should you ask? Well, I'm going to have an entire podcast and an entire article devoted to that before the end of June. So just in about a week and a half, you will have everything you need. It's such a huge topic that I want to give it the space that it commands. So look for that in about a week and a half. So let this podcast marinate a little bit, and we'll come back to that one in a week or two. And in fact, sort of the arc of what I've been talking about, I started first with how to interpret the data you get from listener surveys. This week, I'm talking about how to actually field one, and I'm going to end with how to write one. And you might think that's backwards, but I would counter that actually, you shouldn't sit down to write the thing until you've thought through all of the things that I talked about last week and all of the things that I'm talking about this week to really get your head around the strategy. And I think only then can you sit down and write a quality listener survey that's going to be useful for you. So there. What kinds of tools do I need? Well, listener feedback can be pretty simple. You can ask people to email you to get listener feedback. You don't need any kind of expensive software here. On the free end, I don't think most people are going to need anything more than Google Forms to field a simple survey. I'm sure you can Google that, Google Forms. You can also spend a little bit on tools like Typeform or SurveyMonkey. Obviously, at Edison, we have some tools with a little bit more horsepower for all our election work and so on. But you don't need those kinds of tools if you keep your survey short and simple. If you're using a free tool, here's a pretty good rule of thumb. If what you're asking for is too complex for the tool to handle, don't ask that. Do a simpler thing. Your job is to challenge your listeners, but not defeat them. How do I get people to take my survey? Now we come to a meaty topic. For most people, the sole driver of survey responses is going to be asking people to take the survey in the flow of your podcast itself. Given that in-podcast solicitations are going to be the main driver for people to take your survey, put your back into it. Wherever your questionnaire is hosted, get a short, easy-to-remember link that redirects to it. And the best practice for this is, of course, to have your own URL, your own show website. And that makes it easy for you to make a page on that site that's just called Survey. And you can redirect that to wherever your actual survey is hosted. So, for instance, www.yourpodcast.com/survey. That's really simple to do with WordPress or Squarespace or Wix sites. Just find the redirect on any page you make. Don't make your listeners have to think or spell. As a side note, when I write this newsletter on the web, I refer to the newsletter I Hear Things at the URL, the funky URL I have for it, which is I Hear Things, IHEARTHIN.GS. Thank you to the Sandwich Islands. But that's a redonkulous thing to try and say on a podcast. So when I talk about the podcast, I refer people to tomwebster.media. So you want to have a very simple URL, tomwebster.media, and /survey, which redirects to where the survey is. Now, for the solicitation itself, tell people why you are doing it and how important it is to the show. Sell it. We often do cross-network surveys for large podcast networks in which we combine surveys for each show. We weight them to their download numbers and other associated data, and we come up with demographic and psychographic profiles for that network and for each individual podcast. You know, once we did this for a large podcast network, I'll say a top 10 podcast network, and that network had some very big shows, certainly shows you'd find in the top 50, but also a variety of much smaller shows. And it's one of those smaller shows, a very niche, or as the French would say, niche podcast. They completely killed it in terms of survey response compared to larger shows, because they didn't just say at the end of every episode, oh, take our survey. They actually wrote, performed, and produced an original song that encouraged people to take the survey. And let me tell you, people took that survey. Do you need to work that hard? No. But could you, to great effect? This is between you and your God. In any case, you'll get the best results if the host or hosts talk about the survey live in an engaged, passionate way. You want people to give their feedback, so act the part. A side question to this I sometimes get is, can I ask for survey responses in social media or on my website? In other words, can I only ask for them on the podcast, or can I ask for people to take the survey on Twitter and Facebook, etc.? In the quest for completed surveys, you might be tempted to do this. You might be tempted to promote the survey everywhere that you can, right? I would resist this urge. We see the best results when the sample is pure and driven solely by people who respond to an audio solicitation directly in the podcast itself. That way you know you're getting listeners, at least. You're getting actual listeners, right? Not readers. Whenever clients insist that they want to promote the survey across Twitter or to their company email database, we always make sure we can distinguish those responses from the ones driven by the podcast itself. Responses from social can be really wonky, by the way, compared to other sources. You at least want to be able to tell them apart. So when clients insist on that, we use different links or survey instances for the survey that is sent out on social media so that we can at least distinguish them from the respondents who come from the podcast itself, which are always the best. Now, if you have an email database that was solely developed from and for the podcast, it has no other use, that's an exception to that previous advice. And by the way, if you don't have an email database for your show, now you have another good reason to build one. Email is still the milkshake that brings all the persons to the yard. Another question that I often get is, should I provide an incentive to take the survey? And I'm a big fan of providing an incentive to take a listener survey. It's certainly a good way to convince more casual, again, I talked before about secondary and tertiary listeners. It's a good way to convince them to take the survey. But just think about it this way. When a listener takes the time to fill out a survey, it's a tremendous gift. You should honor that gift, right? Honor that gift. And that incentive doesn't have to be cash, right? And in some cases, it shouldn't be cash. Cash says, I value your time. Now, don't get me wrong, that still works. But also consider why people listen to your show, right? Why are they listening to your show in the first place? How could you give them more of that? An exclusive tool, an exclusive piece of content. If you have a fantasy sports show, give survey takers access to your custom player valuations. If you have a fashion podcast, give them the 10 most essential pieces for your 2021 wardrobe. I know for me, it's sweats. A new car buyer's guide, tips to beat your neighbors in Among Us. A character guide and maps for your fiction podcast. A custom body weight workout routine for your fitness podcast. Do some work. This says more than just, I value your time. It says, I value you. Now, I wrote more about this in my newsletter last December, and I'll post a link to that in the show notes. All right, so you're talking about the survey in your podcast. How long should you do that? How long should you run your survey? I'd recommend talking about the survey for at least 3 episodes. Now, depending on the level of engagement of your audience, that should be sufficient to make most people aware that you're looking for their feedback. My wonderful former boss, Frank Cody, used to characterize the magic of 3 as, huh? What? Oh. The first time you mention it, huh? People will barely be aware that you've even made an ask. It might register in the back of their mind. The second time, they might go, what? They'll crane their heads forward just a little bit just to figure out what they missed. They might even ask about it. The third time is the charm. Oh, you want them to hear it 3 times. So I would hit the survey hard for 3 episodes, but then I'd give it a rest. You don't want the survey solicitations to become wallpaper, right? Part of every show. You might want to repeat your efforts in a year, so you want to make sure that it works then as well. So don't just make the survey a throwaway tag at the end of every show. Hit it for a good 3 weeks, hit it hard, and then give it a rest. There's a reason why pledge drives work in public radio a lot better than just asking for money every single day, right? All right, it's time for the most FAQ'd FAQ I get. How many people do I need to make it statistically reliable? How big does my survey have to be? Well, I'm going to tell you something that will either disappoint you or give you great relief. Your listener survey will not be statistically representative of your audience. There you go. Now, when we conduct the national election exit polling for the news networks, we have to take the pains to ensure that in every precinct we sample, we aren't just taking questionnaires from the people who approach us, the people who want to talk to us. We approach them. We approach a consistent pattern of voters, and we record their responses, their non-responses, their demographic information, whether they participate or not. And with these data, we can weight the exit poll data and calibrate it to prior voting and registration patterns within a given margin of error. That type of sampling is called probabilistic sampling. Every voter in the precinct has an equal non-zero chance of being included. Your listener survey has no way to deal with non-response bias, with the people who don't take it. It's what we call self-selected sampling. And I have to tell you, the margin of error for a self-selected study is yes. There's no margin of error. It's infinite. Instead, the key metrics for you to focus on here are sample quality and response rate. Sample quality first. If you field a study about your fantasy sports podcast and you get 2 million responses from non-sports fans, your results are probably crap. On the other hand, if your podcast is pitched to high-level CMOs and you get 10 Fortune 100 CMOs to take your survey, I think you'd be okay with a sample of 10. And that's the sample quality aspect. Response rate is the other key variable. We at Edison typically don't look at anything that's under 100 persons. And of course, more is more gooder. More important, however, is the relationship between that sample and the size of your downloads. If your show gets 1,000 downloads per episode, a 100-person sample would be pretty great. If your show gets 50,000 downloads per episode, 100 persons might not be so great, and that might be a sign that you need to go back to the drawing board and revamp your solicitation, your call to action. Now, if you can get 5% of your estimated audience to respond, you're doing extremely well indeed, better than direct marketers. Remember, you don't just want your super fans to respond. You need those more casual listeners, and again, some kind of incentive can help with this. And finally, again, we generally don't make decisions on a sample that's smaller than 100. That includes demographic subsets of that sample as well. If you have 17 millennials in your 100-person sample, you're not going to be making any grand declarations about your millennial audience. And I have a very simple rule here. If a given sample or a subset is less than 100, don't express it as a percentage. 68% of 72 people is a horror movie, not a statistic. I think it was called Bits and Pieces. So what do I do with these results? When you get your responses back, you may be disappointed at the response rate. It might happen. Let's face it. We're all busy, and your listeners may not respond in the numbers you had hoped. But that doesn't mean that what you have is worthless. In these situations, I think it's always best to think of a survey not as a thing to tell you what to do. You have your art, your vision, your own roadmap for that. Instead, even with a small sample size, research like this can tell you what not to do. Survey data can give you the guardrails, the constraints that allow you to veer around the road without losing your way. If you treat it thusly, you won't go wrong. Research used correctly isn't about finding the safest path, the middle ground. That, my friends, is the road to Celine Dion. It's about spotting the pothole so you can speed up and take a few risks with your content without the fear of completely blowing up what makes the show great. What should your show do? Well, people will have 1,000 opinions. But what shouldn't you do? There you'll find, I think, a little more agreement. One of the biggest mistakes people make after they have gone through the process of a listener survey is never to mention it again. You should be talking about it constantly. If you introduce a new feature, explain that it came from listener feedback. Bring back a previous guest. Tell people it's because the listeners wanted to hear from them again. Always be reinforcing the value of listener feedback by showing your audience how you're putting their suggestions into action. That's it for this week. I'm going to come back with the next show and really talk about the nuts and bolts of the questionnaire itself. And I think you're going to be very happy with that. So look for that in the next show. Always love to hear from you. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do that at buymeacoffee.com/Tom Webster. I am Tom Webster, and this has been I Hear Things for the week of June 18th. I had to look at my calendar there. This is live, and I don't edit. We'll see you next time.